Καλώς ορίσατε σε
Welcome to another episode of the Discover Creek podcast. Today we have the pleasure and honor of hosting a special guest from Episcopi Heraklion, Mrs. Sevasti Krasanaki, with whom we'll explore the magical world of Crete's forgotten recipes. We'll talk about authentic flavors and traditional dishes that have been passed down through generations, but today are rarely found on our tables. The forgotten traditional recipes of Crete are a treasure trove of flavors and history that reflect the wisdom and simplicity of local cuisine. These recipes are based on pure local ingredients and combine nutritional value with rich flavor. We'll give special mention to Megiri and fennel greens with Siglina smoked pork. Let's discover together the secrets and the stories behind these culinary traditions. How did your love for traditional Cretan recipes begin?
My love was born in the space I live and work, because I grew up surrounded by flour. My father had a bakery, an old stone bakery, so I grew up there. I learned how to work with flour, I loved the whole process, and since we used to deal with lots of people in the village at the time, the people who stayed weren't young or many. The grandmothers would come, bringing things to bake, one thing or another, and I always asked, Auntie, what's this? What's that? And that's how I slowly began to learn and fall in love with this whole culture.
What does preserving and reviving Crete's forgotten dishes mean to you?
To me, it means everything. It means identity, it means culture, it means dignity for the land we live in. Respecting what we've inherited from our parents, from our grandparents, and preserving it properly and with dignity, so the younger generation can learn it too.
Let's mention that right now we are at the village's cultural association. And just a while ago, we prepared a very special recipe. Megiri, can you describe what Megiri is and share its story?
So, Megiri is a dish. They used to call it the poor man's plate back then, because, as you noticed, it's a dish full of flavor. It's a pasta made with the magical cretin dough we use for many things, pies, saracopites, misithropites, sfakions, zeratigana, and also this pasta. It was a dish commonly made by old families quite often. Because it was filling for children and low cost, you understand what I mean, and beyond that, it was delicious. I hope you agree, since you tasted it.
It was absolutely delicious.
And it's a dish you can make in many variations. It was the gourmet dish of the time. We ate it plain, or added cheese and cooked it in broth, or sprinkled sugar and cinnamon to make it sweet. There were options, in other words, so that the family and the kids wouldn't get bored eating the same thing again and again. The woman had to get creative and find ways to keep the dish interesting.
What are its basic ingredients and the preparation method?
The dough includes water, sukudia, olive oil, flour, and salt. We knead the dough, let it rest a bit. Then we roll it out and cut it into small cubes. There's a specific process, which I believe will be shown in the video for everyone to see. We boil water just like for pasta. Add a portion of the cut pasta to boil. And then we fry the rest of the pasta in olive oil. We fry it until it takes on a dark color. The dough absorbs the oil completely. And just like that, from the pan, we transfer it into the pot with the boiled pasta. And we basically have a soup.
So these pasta pieces can be enjoyed either with grated cheese on top, plain, or with that lovely twist you made for me earlier, with sugar and cinnamon, which was amazing. Why do you think Megiri has faded away over time and is no longer commonly made?
Modernism, as I call it. Because people have left the villages now and don't really stay connected with their roots. And don't really live the village life. Whereas we are still a bit pure here in the countryside. And the pressure of time, with work and everything, makes it hard. These things take time. They do take time. But, I believe it's quality time, because they can dedicate it and spend that time with their kids. And for the kids to learn too. Like we do here, in this space, all summer long. We bring the young girls from the area, and we teach them everything you see here. It's beautiful.
Yes, but we also made another recipe, Papa's Yani. Let's start by talking about how this dish got its name, then we'll talk about what it is.
How it got that name? We know very well that our gastronomy is deeply rooted in religion, in fasting days, when we eat meat and when we don't. Although in the past, the usual diet of Cretans didn't include much meat. It was mostly what came from the garden, the home, the countryside, and meat was rare. People mostly used home-raised animals, chickens, rabbits, whatever they had at home. And Christmas was the golden time for families, when everyone would raise a pig to slaughter. And with that pig, they would make countless variations. So, the priest's yarni came about because they needed fasting dishes that were filling and tasty. And this one was created by a priest. Yes, he wanted to eat something more flavorful, more delicious. So he thought of using the greens he had left from the day before. He fried them, added some fresh onion on top, uncooked, not sautéed. Then he tried a different version, with sauce, because, well, it might taste better. And so now there are variations, Papa's Yani, with or without sauce. As you saw, I used sauce I made myself during the summer, because now in winter there are no tomatoes.
Of course, homemade, traditional.
We must make whatever we can in summer so we can stick to seasonality, to follow what's available in each region at a given time.
Has it ever happened that you've served either of these dishes to a local here, and they've reacted in a special way, maybe even been shocked?
Everyone is impressed by the taste, especially the greens. Just the other day, I have a bakery, and some people were there working, and I made it for them, and they said, "What is this dish? This is gourmet." And I told them, these are Cretan gourmet dishes.
Do you believe younger generations are showing interest in traditional Cretan cuisine and forgotten flavors?
I can say they are showing interest, and even those who aren't initially interested, develop it once they taste the food. Cretan cuisine is a timeless value for kids. A truly solid value. It's built on strong foundations, with distinct, clean flavors. You saw it here. We don't add butter or anything like that. These are clean flavors. That's important.
But there's also another recipe we discussed that's completely forgotten and has a whole story behind it. It's fennel greens with siglina. Let's first explain what siglina are.
Siglina. As I mentioned earlier, the pig that was slaughtered at Christmas, each family would use it all the way until Easter, if not longer, because they preserved it. What do I mean? They made sausages, made aparki, made siglina, made sigarides, pork cracklings. The older folks will know sigarides. They are the leftover pork fat scraps that would otherwise be discarded. They would fry them thoroughly and store them. Back then, there were no freezers or anything like that, so they preserved them in fat. So, siglina are pieces of pork belly, mostly with a bit of meat and fat, which they would fry well and then place in a clay jar, covering the meat entirely with the leftover oil from the pan. That way, they created a kind of seal, and they'd cover it with a cloth, tie it up, it would stay preserved. So then, from January onward, the whole family would go out to the vineyards, which used to be plentiful in the area, although now most have been abandoned. The whole family would go, including the women and kids, carrying the kids on their backs, essentially moving the household to the field. They'd set up a makeshift kitchen, just a pan, a pot, and the kids on their shoulders. A bit of siglino, and they'd find wild fennel in the fields. They'd sauté it briefly in the pan, add the siglino, and that was a meal. Absolutely delicious.
What advice would you give to someone wanting to start cooking traditional Cretan dishes?
First, they should explore their roots, where they come from, because all of Crete, from one end to the other, has incredible cuisine. But every region has its own unique dishes. In Anya, for example, they roast chestnuts with meat. They make amazing pies in Haina. Meat pies, and they use a lot of lamb there. Rethymno also has mountain villages like Anagia, with Antichristo, lamb, their pies, their saricopites. Heraklion has more of a tradition with pork, especially caprica dishes. Sitio makes wonderful sweets and delicious food. Each region has a pure, distinct cuisine. You have to explore your roots first, because once we do, our curiosity is sparked, and we begin to see what truly sustained our families. And as you mentioned earlier, Cretans live very, very long lives. That says something. Because the olive oil that all of Crete has, the agricultural products, everything, we still consider most of it to be clean.
Great, and now one last empirical question. If a foreigner wanted to make magiri on their own, but didn't want to go through the whole process of making the dough from scratch, what kind of pasta could they use?
There's a small workshop here in Crete, maybe one or two, that sells dried magiri, just like pasta, like macaroni, and it's cut the same way you saw it earlier, a bit thicker than regular macaroni. It's dried, so it doesn't have the same taste as fresh, but it comes very close.
So our recommendation is?
Our recommendation is to make it fresh. I mean, if they can then have the means and the time. And as we said, time these days is limited due to how busy life is.
Thank you very much for your hospitality.
Thank you, and the whole cultural association thanks you, and I personally thank you. Be well.
All the best. We've now arrived in Apostolipediados. And with us is Mrs. Lina Igumenaki, who is the president of the Cretan Cuisine Festival.
So welcome to our kitchen, here in Apostolipediados. This is a space provided to us by the municipality of Minoa Pediada. And with a lot of love and care, we created this kitchen of ours, I would say. And here, beautiful things happen, not just recipes. But we also share the stories behind the food. And today we'll be making a dish that holds a lot of emotion for me, the Apostolian white-eyed bean. It's an old, almost forgotten recipe. As a legume, it was nearly forgotten, and in recent years, we've brought it back to life as a crop. It's not widely cultivated. During a home renovation in the village, a handful of beans was found. And Haris Petroyougakis took them, cultivated them, and now the whole village eats those beans. There was a reason, back in the day, why people called the Apostolians bean eaters. And back then I didn't understand why. But I remember my grandfather growing them in a specific field in the Apostolian plain. And not in other fields, only that field, which was right next to the Babulanis River. Because this bean is dry farmed and low growing. It looks a lot like the black-eyed pea, with the same shape, just completely white. And its eye is also whiter than that of the black-eyed pea. They cooked it in various ways. With fennel, with goat. As a soupy dish, and if any food was left the next day. Like all legumes, this was part of household economy. The housewife would either add it to vegetables or mix it with something else, turning it into a second dish.
So this bean was tied to the place it could be grown, it couldn't be grown just anywhere.
Yes, it needed that specific spot, fields where the Babulanis River passed and there was a lot of moisture.
Perhaps to it disappearing, when the river dried up.
Yes, because it doesn't rain now, the river has no water, and those who grow this bean now have to water it. There's no water anymore.
So how did you first rediscover this recipe?
It was first made by my grandmother. It's my favorite recipe, and it's one made at this time of year. First, because they had already harvested pumpkins in September. So there was sweet pumpkin in the house all winter, and she would make different recipes with it.
This pumpkin, as you told me earlier, is different from the others.
The cretin pumpkin narrows at the top. It has a completely different shape. It's long, but it narrows upwards. It's wider at the bottom and gets narrower towards the top. This is the cretin variety, which they cooked, not just for pies or fried. They also added it to dishes with vegetables. And that's why it was part of this lovely dish, which for some reason, I really loved from a young age. Maybe it was the color I liked, that orange.
The Apostolian white-eyed bean.
Yes, the Apostolian white-eyed bean. And I call it Apostolian, because you can't grow it anywhere else.
Let's talk a bit about the recipe, the ingredients and the method.
The recipe is very simple. After soaking and boiling the beans, they don't take very long. I should also say you can make the same recipe with black-eyed peas.
So we have a substitute if we're not from Apostoli.
Exactly, if we're not from Apostoli. We soak them, boil them until they are almost cooked, not fully done. Then in a pot, we add olive oil, finely chopped onion, sauté it a bit, add the pumpkin, and let it cook a little. After about 10 minutes we taste it, and when we feel it needs another 10 minutes, we add the nearly cooked beans. We add a bit of water, salt, pepper, and let it simmer and thicken. That's it.
It's absolutely delicious. Let's talk a bit about the secret to making this dish great. From everything we've heard, I feel the secret is the ingredients, especially the beans, and the seasonality.
Of course, what makes food tasty is the ingredients. And if we use them in the right season, when they're naturally available, they taste completely different. So the main role is played by the ingredients, the olive oil, and of course the care you put into cooking. Because old housewives really cared for their food, they simmered it slowly, looked after it, tasted it. They didn't just throw it in a pressure cooker, count 10 minutes and serve it. They pampered their food, just like they pampered their children, and that's why it tastes so special.
I think we all have memories of a mother or grandmother who really paid attention to the food. And we'd be eagerly waiting to eat it, and the cooking seemed never ending. Do you believe modern cuisine can be combined with traditional recipes?
Of course. Here in Crete, I've noticed that all visitors, whether from abroad or the rest of Greece, really want to try our cuisine, but they want to try the authentic version. They can find everything else anywhere else. So I think this is a wonderful dish to serve in a restaurant.
And not just that, the manerolia we tried, and the olives too. Let's talk a bit about the manerolia.
For me, it's my favorite legume, even though my grandmother didn't cook it. I remember there was a time when we grew it, but it was used as animal feed. I had kind of underestimated it as a legume, but in recent years we've brought it back. It's now cultivated in Thrapsano and on the Lasithi Plateau. It's a legume that looks a bit like a small fava bean. It has a skin, you can peel it off if you want. And they cooked it like fava, boiled it, mashed it, and added onion, olive oil, salt, and lemon. During this season, they cooked it with fennel, which makes a very tasty stew. They also added it to dishes with vegetables, like eggplant. I've tried it in the plateau, and it's fantastic, a nice little stew. You can also boil various legumes, chickpeas, manerolia, beans, and wheat, and make this wonderful recipe we call palikaria in Crete.
A wonderful recipe.
A wonderful recipe, where you just add nothing but olive oil, boil all the legumes, mix them, add olive oil, lemon, salt, parsley, fresh onion, and it's a fantastic recipe. This particular recipe, Palicaria, dates back to the Minoan era, and it was offered to young men going to war. That's why the name stuck, to give them strength. So it's super energizing and nutritious.
Why do you believe it's important to revive these recipes and keep them alive?
Well, that's what we're doing now at the Cretan Cuisine Festival. Always in collaboration with associations and people who love Cretan cuisine, customs, and traditions, because our cuisine has many customs and traditions rooted in diet. Like fasting, Easter, Christmas. So what we do with the associations and individually, with women and people who enjoy cooking, is to record these recipes, and the goal is to pass them on to the next generations. Because we grew up, if not all year round, then during these very important holidays, in the village, with our grandmother, who did all these beautiful things, from kneading, making kalitsunia, even at baptisms, weddings, funerals, everything was very modest back then. The housewife did all these things with great love, putting a lot of emotion into it. That's why I say that, for me, a recipe without emotion isn't tasty. So by recording all these recipes, whether through a book we've made, we're preparing another one, or by going to schools, or gathering here to cook a recipe and share it with others, and for them to see this image, and the children learn the customs, respect their roots, recognize their roots. Because cuisine is also culture.
I think that today the new generation shows a more lively interest in healthy, nutritious recipes. It's not like the previous generation, which was more devoted to fast food, influenced by advertisements and television. Now kids are exploring differently.
Now, I think families are exploring differently, and the family plays a very important role in all this. I remember, for example, in my village, which was purely agricultural, if a family had, say, 5 children, one would stay behind to manage the property, and the rest would study. Because life was very hard back then, they wanted the children to leave the village and study, so they wouldn't struggle so much. So I think our generation went through this period with television, advertising, and at some point, some things were lost. Even our dances. In recent years, children are dancing again. All these things were lost, stored away in trunks. And in recent years, the trunks have been opened, hearts have opened, and people are starting to remember. They might see a woven cloth and remember a recipe, or a woven cloth their grandmother used to cover the 7 times risen bread, for example. Or she would remove the middle door of the house, lay out a clean sheet, and on top of that place the 7 times risen breads, covering them with beautiful woven cloths. Everything has to do with the cuisine. That's why we say that the cuisine is culture, not just Cretan cuisine, but all of Greek cuisine. Each region has its own customs and traditions. So we try to revive all this, not alone, because there are many people by our side. And as a team, we really love what we do, because we dedicate a lot of our personal time. And what you see is genuine.
Since you mentioned the 7 times risen bread, which I have right here beside me, and
you'll taste a bit of it.
It's delicious, especially with tirozuli cheese. You told me earlier that our 7 times risen bread is different from the one you'll find in a bakery.
Homemade 7 times risen bread is, of course, different. Not that you won't find a eftazima bread at a bakery. The only difference is that this specific bread is the traditional bread of the plains, the reftazima, which is made with kunenos, meaning ground chickpeas, which you grind into powder, mix with water, and make a batter. You leave it to rise. And back then, housewives wouldn't say they were making kunenos because they believed it could be jinxed. So they did it in secret. I remember my grandmother would go to bed and she would be preparing the kunenos and keep it near the hearth all night, covered, to let it rise. They did it secretly. The next day she'd mix it with flour and knead it, adding aromatics too, like cinnamon, pepper, sesame, and kneading it in. Back then they made a lot of bread, because it was also very hard work. They might make enough bread for the whole month. Or if not for the whole month, then depending on the family, for 15 days.
These are really interesting details, because they also relate to the way of life, how food and lifestyle were connected, and maybe it makes us think about how that was lost. Because, let's be honest, women today just don't have the luxury of time.
Poor things, they work too. Back then, a woman's role was to be at home. She was there to look after the house, the family, the children. Of course, she'd also help her husband in the fields, but her main focus was the family. But I also want to say that the man helped with the bread making too. The man might light the oven, which is a tough job, sweep it, oversee the process, put the bread in. And then they'd take out the bread, that beautiful bread, making round and long loaves. The round ones were for eating over the next few days. The long ones they'd make into entakos and bake again. They'd leave them in the oven all night. That's the cretin entakos.
Basically, it became a rusk.
Yes, basically. And this entakos became a salad, and it actually made it globally as a cretin salad. Olive oil, oregano. If they had tomato paste in winter, they used that. In summer, they used fresh tomato. If they had cheese, they'd add that too, zinamizithra on top. And it was a complete evening meal. And even now, I think dietitians and nutritionists recognize it as a proper meal.
They recommend it as a very healthy option.
Here in our kitchen in Apostoli, we serve it today with homemade tirazuli.
Another favorite cheese, for sure.
It's a cheese, homemade tirazuli, cretin it's called. Housewives made it from their own animals, usually goats, one or two. They kept the milk, made this amazing cheese, which is also very low in fat. They either ate it fresh, right after making it, just to taste. While it still had its moisture, they'd put it in a tzantila, a cloth with tiny little holes, squeeze it tight, and hang it to drain all the liquid, and then make fantastic pies. I remember my grandmother made the best pies with this tirazuli. She'd grate it and make mizithropites, or just eat it raw with food, or let it dry out and grate it over macaronia. That's what we call pasta in Crete, and it was incredible.
Is there a traditional Cretan recipe from your childhood that you've really connected with, but that's now rarely seen or heard of?
I think I've brought back all the recipes from my childhood. But I won't say it now, I'll keep it a surprise, not yet. But yesterday, I was at a monastery, and we talked about a specific fasting period. As we talked, I remembered it. I'll tell you about it on June 22nd. That really brought back memories. That's why I say all these recipes bring memories to life, for those who've lived them. Yes, I've brought back all my recipes. There's nothing I'd say I haven't lived through.
There's another recipe I'd like us to talk about. I have the dish right here in front of me, already.
There it is, ready.
I'd say it's a gourmet. Cretan recipe that's disappeared.
Because isn't it? I mean, I believe that the authentic Cretan cuisine is, I think, for restaurants, I don't know how many stars, it deserves so many.
Through its simplicity and combinations.
That's what makes Cretan cuisine special, its simplicity, the simple ingredients, the way of cooking, which is very simple,
and the clever combinations.
Yes, and these wonderful ladies, women who created these recipes, and I keep saying it, even if they are no longer with us, I admire them and thank them for everything we have today. From the cookware, the weaving, what can I say? Everything is just beautiful, really. So this is a recipe. They are called Sintramades, made for us by Mrs. Maria from Ethiopia many years ago. If I remember right, it was at the third Cretan cuisine festival, and in general, it was a snack you'd make when unexpected guests showed up. And the housewife would think, what can I do? She'd fry some olives, which every home had. Sometimes she'd douse them in vinegar and rosemary, a kind of savory glaze, or with orange, and add some garlic, and it was beyond words.
That variety is just.
These are thick olives. Not the Koroniki type that doesn't have flesh. You want an olive that has pulp, a real, full olive.
If you could send out a message to the world about Cretan cuisine and these forgotten flavors, what would that message be?
I think my message is that those who still carry memories should share them. Because when you share something, it gains a whole new value. We really have to share whatever we have, or rather, the memories we have from our grandmother, our grandfather. Because when you share, it gives things a new kind of value and elevates our culture too.
We also thank you so much for sharing all that you know in this podcast about forgotten recipes on Discover Crete.
Thank you very much too. And I'd be happy to do another recipe together.